Hey, this is Brad again. Look, no ifs, ands, buts about it. Best team in the NFC, hands down, Green Bay Packers. And I don't even know if there's anyone close to them. They're playing lights out. And, you know, they're only getting better week after week. So the rest of the NFC better pick it up if they're going to catch the Packers. Of course, Aaron is playing outstanding. And, you know, I think they'll be in the Super Bowl.
Studios in Manhattan, Cheesehead TV brings you two guys who like to think they know something about football.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Packer Transplants Live. I am Aaron Nagler, and with me, as always, is Mr. Corey Banky, my partner here at CheeseheadTV.com. We're joined on our live blog by Jamie Snowden and Alex Talish, along with the best and the brightest from around the Packers blogosphere. So, Mr. Banky, why don't you tell us what is on tap tonight?
Later tonight, we are going to be talking about the domination of the Philadelphia Eagles by the Green Bay Packers and break down the matchup with the Vikings. But right now, it's time for the good, the bad, and the ugly. We got the good. We got Aaron Rodgers,
your odds-on favorite to win the NFL's MVP award.
LaTroy Guyon,
wrecking fools up front.
Randall Cobb.
Don't worry, Packers fans, he's going to stick around.
And we got the ugly. We got...
Wait!
Oh.
We got the bad.
We got
first.
The bad. We got Morgan Burnett.
Dude. Buddy. Mega tackle.
Tim Mastey.
Hold on to that extra point try, buddy.
Mason Crosby.
Make that 50-yarder, buddy.
And we finally have the ugly. We have...
The Philadelphia Eagles, who, in some comments made to the Philadelphia media earlier this week, said they wanted to wipe the smirk off of Aaron Rodgers' face during that game. Sorry, thanks for playing.
Looks like they did that.
You know,
not.
Except they didn't. Except they did the opposite of that. Uh-oh. Banky doesn't like the shot. He's on his way. He forgot to do something. So I'm left here vamping. I'm just going to drink my Wisco Disco.
There you go.
It just happens to be here in front of me. So what are you going to do other than drink it?
So our last hat giveaway, thanks to Wisco Disco.
Last one, people.
Is...
last one.
You know what you need to do? And for those of you that don't know what you need to do, I'm going to show you. So
and he's going
to
tell you.
If you want to win this hat, you need to tweet... I'm watching Packer Transplants Live on at Cheesehead TV, sponsored by at Wisco Disco Beer. If you want to win the hat, I sent out the hat from last week this morning. Took me a little while. I'll try to send
you
out.
You will receive it, though. We promise.
Oh, yeah. I've got the tracking information and everything. So we're going to try to send this out on Friday. And we've had some very good winners. We've had a Miami winner. We've had a awesome. New Jersey winner. And
that one you could have just swum across the river.
Well,
but
I don't know why. It gets there tomorrow, luckily. So
that's great.
But yeah,
it took a week to go across.
If you want to win the hat, then you need to tweet. This is the last time you can win.
Last one, people.
Last time.
Look at that hat.
Win.
That's what the coaches wear on the sideline. You know you want one.
You know you want one.
Come on now. So as always, big thanks to Stillmank Brewery.
Stillmank Brewery.
Disco Disco in the house.
They just put some Perky Porter in bottles. First time I've seen Stillmank Brewery now. In bottles. Very classy.
Come on.
But I like the cans.
We're never going to have bottles.
Yeah,
over
I don't
here.
Really want
we
bottles.
We will always
on the show.
Be a can
I'm gonna
shop.
I'm going to be like, I kind of want a bottle. So there you have it. So,
ready?
Packers.
Get some Packers news. I think the biggest thing coming out of today's practice and Mike McCarthy's subsequent media availability would be one, Clay Matthews, limited at practice. With a groin injury.
Why are you clapping?
You know,
this is what I have for you.
You look like Bill Belichick right now.
That's what I'm trying. That's what I'm going for.
You know, let me tell you, it's not
when
a Packers season.
When you say
season,
a joke on this show, I'm just going to do this from now
it's
on.
It's not a Packers season until we're worrying about Clay Matthews' hamstring. And I know we were earlier in the year, but here we are again. Blowing teams out, putting up 50 burgers in back-to-back weeks for the first time ever in the storied history of the franchise, which, by the way, we will get to later in the program. But we can't just enjoy it. Can't just spend the week marinating in the ass-kicking. Wednesday comes along. After the head coach said there are no new injuries to report.
There's a little bit of new injuries.
Here comes Clay Matthews' hamstring. Caused a little bit of friction. A little bit of doubt. A little bit of, oh my God, here we go again. So thanks for that, Clay. Also dealing with a groin injury, Mr. Jarrett Bush, Corey's favorite. Now, I'm
he used to play on the team.
No,
oh, yeah, I actually saw that in the Micah Hyde punt return.
Yep.
He had a really good block.
Yeah, he had a good block.
Not the decisive block.
Richardson had the big block. Richardson had the pancake.
Why are
which
you
was
putting
awesome.
Your chin strap on? Did you see that? The guy putting his chin strap on during that punt return?
That was great. Well, because you forgot. I guess.
But
I don't
if
know,
you've forgotten
awesome.
To put your chin strap
you're just
on,
going to go and like, just like hope it doesn't fly off.
I don't think AJ, awesome. That's what AJ Hawk probably does. He probably forgets to do it, and that's why his helmet always
comes.
He's always like, dude, I'm not putting my chin strap on after they've hiked the ball.
Now, to both of these, Mike McCarthy said at his press conference that he doesn't have a high degree of concern. But still. Included on the injury list is Nick Perry dealing with a shoulder injury. Again, supposedly not a worry. So we will see. Good to see both Sitton and Lang out there, although in a limited capacity. But obviously they've played the last 2 weeks. They haven't aggravated anything, or so the Packers are telling us. So hopefully going forward, those injuries have been dealt with. Obviously they could always crop up again. But hopefully now we just want Clay's legs to be all right for Sunday against the Vikings. Hopefully.
Yeah, I think we'll be fine.
You look at me dubiously, and I'm like, you know. All right, speaking of blowing teams out and putting up 50 on people, are the Packers peaking too early?
What does that even mean?
I don't know. I'm with you, and I'm with QB1 on this.
If you believe, okay, so in order for you to think that they're...
You know who else peaked too early? Wait a second. I'm sorry to trample on this. You were about to make a point. But I'm going to trample on this like the Green Bay Packers do when they're like facing an opponent, all right? Because let me tell you who else, quote-unquote, peaked too early. The 1996 Green Bay Packers, who, if you'll all remember, won the Super Bowl. Oh, but don't you remember, Corey? Early in the year, they were blowing people out. The same Philadelphia Eagles destroying them on Monday Night Football. Everyone's like, they are obviously the best team in the NFL. And then what happened? They had a little dip. They had a bunch of injuries. They had to go sign Andre Rison. You know, Freeman breaks his arm, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They had that horrible first half against the Rams. Not a lot of people remember this. Going to the halftime against the Rams on national television, everyone's like, what is wrong with the Packers? Oh, my God, this season's spiraling out of control. Oh, no. And then what happens? Halftime comes. The adjustments are made. Packers come back out. Booyah. The march is on. And there they go. So there's no such thing as peaking at any point.
My point was going to be that in order for you to answer the question, are they peaking too early? Mm-hmm. You have to make the assumption that teams peak during the season.
Right.
Which kind of makes no sense.
Zero sense.
It's only a narrative that
color
commentators need to use because every year we have a playoff system.
Yep.
And so 2 weeks before the playoffs, who's doing better than others?
Yep. And who's the hot team one wants to play?
And what does that even mean? I mean, hot and buzz, they're words that, you know, you got to use because you have to write words on a paper, as Jason Wilde would say.
I will say, though, the Packers can play better. And I think that's the scary proposition for the rest of the league. And we'll talk about it a little later, but if you go back and watch the Vikings game, which they blew the Vikings out, the Vikings actually did a pretty good job at points of limiting the Packers' offense. So there's always an ability to do better. There's an always, you know, there's always something else to strive for. And I think the Packers, as QB1 said in his radio show yesterday, they are going to deal with it the correct way. They know that there's a ton of work yet to do. Even though times are great, and they're putting up 50 a week.
I mean, excited. I think that's more of the danger. It's not about the peaking too early. It's right. more of
complacency.
It's more of thinking that you know what doesn't smell.
Yeah. Well,
and hedging against that because there's not as many young guys as there have been on previous Packer teams under Ted Thompson, right?
We're it's not quite as young.
We're not quite as young as we are.
It's young, but it's not the youngest.
So, right. You know, I would hate for the Packers to think they could put 50 on anybody up in the NFL.
Well, and here's the thing.
Now, I believe that they can.
Yeah,
and I
have
always believed this season that they can, by the way, FYI.
Oh, by the way, speaking of that, we got to talk about our $100 bet.
Yep. I can't remember what we bet, but I know that you owe me $100.
No, sir. We got to get some math up in here, which I'm too lazy to do. But in our $100 bet last week, if you'll recall, you stated that the Philadelphia Eagles would score 0 points.
Yeah, but that wasn't the bet part, though.
No, the bet was who was closer.
Yeah.
In the total score.
Yeah. But I was closer. Because it was 11 to 50. That's 40-point spread, dude.
Not necessarily.
Yes.
No. I think you need to go back and watch the bet again. Yep.
People on Twitter said I won.
Yeah, because they remembered it the same way I did. That's why I was like, yep, you won it. And then I went back and watched it, and I went, wait, you went back and watched it? Yeah.
So why don't you know the answer?
38-21 was my prediction, and yours was 20-something zero.
Yeah, so we won by 40 points.
Yeah.
We won by, I had us winning.
Yeah, and you don't even have close to 40.
But I had us winning by a larger margin than you.
Yeah, but that wasn't the bet.
Well, you're not going to give me $100 anyway.
Yeah, I would. I got it in my wallet right
Nagler,
now.
If we were actually doing the show and you owed me a bet, I would get the $100. You'd give me the $100 that I gave you, and that's how we would do it. Okay.
No, it's not.
Yes.
Not even close.
I don't take your money.
Yeah, you do.
I can yell at you. I cannot like what you have to say. I can do all kinds of things.
Yeah, we know that.
But I'm not taking your money. That's never going to happen. Anyway, when you're a millionaire, I'll take your money.
We're digressing.
And
hardcore.
And?
Yeah, and that's the show, pretty much. So what am I saying? Anyway.
Anyway, they're not peaking too early is the
answer
to that question.
There's no such thing as peaking too early. Hey, why don't we get back on track with a little Mike McCarthy, a little best and worst.
Okay.
Welcome back to Mike's Best and Worst, Week 11 of the 2014 NFL regular season. If this team keeps putting up 50 points every week, it's going to be very hard to find things for the bad column. In the good part of the ledger, there are lots of things you could point to, but let's go with Mike McCarthy's off-season decision to go with leaner, more athletic guys up front. It really paid off against the Eagles, a team that gave this defense problems last year. This time, the athleticism up front, not only getting to Mark Sanchez, but corralling LeSean McCoy, paid off in spades. That's a direct result of a decision McCarthy made this offseason. Great job in Week 11. Again, it's hard to find much to fault in this dominating victory over the Eagles, but let's go with Mike's decision to stick with a toss play that is clearly not working. After finding success early in the game on one particular play, he kept going back to it. Now, obviously, this might be Rodgers changing something at the line and calling the toss, but repeatedly they kept trying to get wide with Lacy, and it wasn't working. But that, again, is a nitpick. Overall, another fantastic performance from Mike McCarthy and the Green Bay Packers.
You like how I put that flag?
I like the whistle at the end. That's very nice. Because I didn't throw the challenge flag. Because there's nothing to challenge when you're blowing people out.
I know. I love how you have to like find
things to nitpick about. Yeah. Well, we ended with Eddie Lacy doing the toss. And again, I know. It's a total nitpick. I mean, what are you going to complain about when you're putting up 50 on the Philadelphia Eagles? But speaking of Eddie Lacy on the offensive side of the football, I loved the fact that Eddie played all of the snaps in the first half. Every single one. There was no rotation. There was no, like, even pretending that, oh, we're going to mix James Starks in there. And I have enjoyed Starks' work this year, and he's done well. But
I think we need more Duan Harris.
I agree. I loved seeing him get in there 2 weeks ago. And I love his running style, and people have known for a long time. I'm a huge fan. But Eddie Lacy is the man, and he should be running. Yeah. He should be running until the wheels come
also,
off.
Also, the thing I didn't tell you, but like when we were doing the video, I felt like the real nitpick the last 2 weeks mm-hmm. is, does Aaron Rodgers really
need
like,
to be in there?
Yeah, I feel like I hear you. I feel like we take him out two drives
right.
later than we should. You know what I mean?
Sometimes. But again, how much of that is Mike? How much of that is Aaron? How much does Aaron want to stay in there? How much does Aaron want to up those stats a little bit? I don't think that's not a real consideration for Aaron.
I mean, it's hard. I was torn. I wanted him to get the record, but then records are BS. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, they really are. Like,
no, I hear you. I hear you.
They're great. They're great to look back at. They're great for those little things when ESPN pulls them out on Monday Night Football. I mean,
and you're like, there's Aaron Rodgers. He's
awesome. Yeah, that's great.
But let me tell you, in regards to Rodgers, one of the biggest reasons he's upright this season is because of the pass protection from Eddie Lacy. Lacy has done an amazing job. The jump he's made from last year, which he was actually pretty good for a rookie running back, who are always disastrous, not always, but mostly disastrous when they come up from the college ranks to the pros, whether it's the actual physicality of the block itself or if it's the recognition. I mean, I was watching, because this is what I do, it's my day job, it's what I get paid to do. I was watching freaking Bucks versus Redskins tape. And watching Bobby Rainey try and recognize a blitz, that's that. Like, if Bobby Rainey was behind, like next to Aaron Rodgers,
he'd be
we would all fear for his life. I mean, that's why you look at Eddie Lacy and you really appreciate how well, how amazing he's done since last year to this year. Again, he was fine last year, but this year he's totally taking it up a notch.
I mean, when's the last time a Green Bay Packer running back could take four guys on his back and get in the end zone?
Well, he did. Let's be fair, as Aaron pointed out, he did have an assist from Andrew Corliss. I mean,
and
Corliss did help him in, but he got there. He got to the 2 yard line.
Yeah, there were two guys that were on top of him before that, too.
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely.
The other thing is that I was watching that I thought was interesting, and I don't have to watch the Bucks ever. which
you thank yourself. For
yeah,
that.
I think my life's better for that. Dave, back to Yari.
Mm.
Holy crap!
Mm-hmm. Right.
Did Chad Clifton just show up?
I know, right?
What is happening?
I know,
he's
right?
He's going again. Like,
that's Trent Cole over there.
He's going against
Trent
Cole.
And he's shutting him down.
I used to have Trent Cole on the fantasy team. Like, that's like a good defensive lineman.
Yeah, and he's shutting him down.
It's kind of insane to really think about. You know what I mean?
Especially
the left tackle position, because that's supposed to be like
the premier position
that
we got in a later round, some throwaway pick a couple years ago.
It's really fascinating. Most people, they secure that in the first round. They can't, you mean?
And here we go. We've got David Bakhtiari out of Colorado just manning up. Oh, also friend of show, we should mention. Also, kicker of my ass when it comes to FIFA. But
I bet he would beat you in Madden, too.
No chance. No chance.
I'll bet you the $100 you owe me.
There you go. Oh, you. Or Shinola.
I'll bet you double or nothing he can beat you.
No, because the double or nothing we would have to owe. I need official confirmation. We're
but
not going to talk about this.
We're not the show.
I do, but I did. I was like, wait a second. And then I was like, oh, I got to go. So then I'm going to go back and look at it. Let's move on to the number 2 point here, son.
Okay, micromanager.
Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb. Perfect partners. If you have not yet, fair viewers and listeners, make sure you peruse this here, cheeseheadtv.com, and find Brian Caravu's post telling you not to worry, Randall Cobb is not going anywhere. I thought Brian did a fantastic job of not only mining history in regards to Ted's kind of actions up to this point when it comes to players coming up on their first negotiation, their involvement, so to speak, on their side of the ball, whether it be offense or defense, and the track record there of allowing people to test free agency. Let's just say, go read it, because Brian does a great job of breaking it down.
I'm trying to find the link so I can post it.
Brian does a great job of breaking it down and just basically pointing out that, look, Ted doesn't let these types of guys walk. It just doesn't happen. And if he does, it's with an offer on the table saying, here's our offer. Go see what you find out there. And if you don't like what you see, you're always welcome back. Now, as I said to a couple of people on Twitter this week, this does take two to tango. I mean, Randall Cobb is a very exciting young receiver. We all understand that. The rest of the NFL understands that. The onus will be on Randall Cobb and his representatives to determine whether they are okay with a pay-as-you-go contract, because that's what the Packers do, and or going out to free agency and seeing what's out there. Maybe you can get some more money.
But like you said, I do feel like it's interesting, though. Ted, from the time he drafts a player, he has a roadmap.
Yeah. You know, and if that player is successful in their program, more often than not, he'll lock them up. And he'll get him in the fold.
Because it's not even about locking. He has an idea of where they're going to fit in cap room, too. Yes. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
It's all part of the thing.
But
you know, and to Randall Cobb's credit, though, look, this is a 3-year average game. I always am a full believer. Yeah. Make your money, okay?
Yep.
Even as a fan,
yep.
I'm a fan of the game as much as I am a fan of the Packers.
Yep.
Well, I'm more of a fan of the Packers than a fan of the game. But this is a real man's life, and he should go out there and see what he's worth. Now, I guarantee you that Aaron Rodgers is part of that conversation.
That's
from Cobb's viewpoint.
What I was about to say is Randall Cobb would be wise to call his old running mate there in Minnesota named Greg Jennings. He'd be wise to go call his old running mate there in Oakland named James Jones.
Well, I thought it was very fascinating that Julius Peppers has more touchdowns than Greg Jennings.
How great is that? How great is that?
If I would have said that on the first transplants of the season, you'd have been like, there's no way.
Do you know who else has more touchdowns than Greg Jennings?
Oh.
J.J. Watt.
I don't like that as
That's
much.
That's hilarious.
That's hilarious.
It's hilarious.
I wish we had J.J. Watt.
I so wish we had J.J. Watt.
I think the salary cap needs like $150 million
more
dollars.
So does the NFLPA. Yeah, but so, fret not, people. We were highly doubting Randall Cobb takes a walk.
But that just means
that
you get Cobb, guess what? That means no Tremont.
We've discussed this before, Corey.
Yeah, but
now you're seeing the big picture.
Before we didn't lock in Cobb.
No, I know. We weren't talking big picture. Now you're seeing how the pieces all fit.
No, I know how the pieces fit. It's just now we're locking in Cobb. If you lock in part of the puzzle, it's like it changes.
Especially when you have Sam Shields already paid and you've got Devon House coming on and you got Casey Hayward playing and Micah Hyde locking it down at nickel. Somebody's got to be the odd man out. But that's for down the road. We're not worried about that right now. Because I don't want Corey to leap over the table and kill me.
I just don't think that should happen. I think we should find a way.
Last point on the offense, the toss play. As we mentioned in Mike's Best and Worst.
Okay, why do you hate the toss play so much?
Because they don't run it well.
Do they not run it well because the guards don't pull well?
If they could ever get the edge, I might be
But does that have to do with guards pulling, or does that have to do with the tight end?
No, because the way they do it, more often than not, although it was interesting, Bob McGinn wrote about it in his breakdown, where he said it was curious that they asked Josh Sitton to pull so much with the, on a bad wheel. No, it's just that zone scheme that they run. And the first one, here's the thing. The very first time they ran it, they got 6 yards. And I think that was like Mike saw that and was like, oh, here we go.
But has to set the edge? Isn't it Richard Rodgers? Isn't it Andrew Corliss?
It depends which way they go.
But it's usually a tight end, right?
Yes.
So
the way they've been
when
running.
When you look at our tight ends.
Okay, let me tell you. I was watching the tape last night. There is a play where there's a two tight end set. They send Corliss in motion, and they're backed up kind of like the 10-yard line or something. They send Corliss in motion to the left, right? So it's a two tight end traditional ace set. And Rodgers hikes the ball and turns to his left and hands it to Eddie Lacy. And if you watch Richard Rodgers, he literally barely goes down to touch he's supposed to double team the guy and then get to the second level and take out the linebacker, right? That's pretty clearly what his assignment is. But he goes and barely touches the lineman, and then he just runs upfield. The linebacker is flowing to Eddie Lacy, and Richard Rodgers just starts running. Like, I have no idea. I must have watched this play 20 times, both from the all-22 angle and the end zone angle. I have no idea where he was going. I have no idea. No clue what he was trying to do. So you're still dealing with some of that. But to the toss play,
Yeah, the idea is to get the toss going and then have Eddie see the cutback and then go. The cutback hasn't been there. And it was there the very first play because Jordy Nelson did a great job of they motioned him to the edge of the formation, and he literally used his butt to block a guy. He boxed out like in basketball.
Yeah.
And the guy kind of got around him and made the tackle, but it was 6 yards down the field, so it was pretty good. But other than that, there was no cutback for Eddie all night. And whoever was out front, whether it was a tackle or a tight end, usually gets blown up. So, because they're not firing out, they're firing sideways because it's a zone stretch, and they just get blown off the ball.
I mean, I don't understand. I was reading, somebody asked about Bash Vic, and, you know, people on Twitter had tweeted me this week that...
Wait, this is huge if true. People on Twitter tweeted you?
I hate you. So people
This is great.
I noticed and I was trying to point it out to you. But go. So people on Twitter tweeted me. They're like, man, Vic was so mean this week. And I read like 7 posts and I was like, I didn't see it. I couldn't find it. But I found something even better that we're going to talk about later. But Vic did make a really good point that I did notice when I was watching the tape. That they were playing a lot of one safety on us, which means that
single high.
They were basically so worried about Eddie Lacy that they forgot about Aaron Rodgers. Yep. And if every team does that to us, basically we're going to score 50 every time. If you play us one safety in the back, that's got to be the dumbest thing you could ever do. Why would you do that?
I tweeted it last night. I was watching the tape and I said to myself in my living room, drinking a beer to no one in particular, I said, does Bill Davis have a death wish? Like, seriously.
Aaron Rodgers has to do is say, who's not double-teamed? Okay, I'm going to him.
The amount of single high
safety. I have man-to-man on Jordy Nelson.
The amount of single high safety the Packers saw on Sunday, they will never see again. Not this year. No way.
Why would you play that? It doesn't make any sense. It takes him... If you watch Aaron Rodgers' delivery right now, and people are saying he's peaking, and I don't actually believe that. I don't believe that. And Vic did say that. If there's one thing I have against him, he's not peaking, okay? He's not at his peak form. He's just started. And it's insane. Like, you look at his delivery. It's really fast, right? And he's really calm. Why would you play... Why would you telegraph who you're a man-to-man and who you're going to double up on to Aaron Rodgers. It makes no sense.
Well, here's the thing, too, is the 49ers, the teams that have been successful against the Packers offense, always have played too high. They've played too high. They haven't had to put anybody down in the box, and they've just played a traditional set. And the Eagles, for whatever reason, didn't trust their guys to do that. They paid the price, which I'm fine with for obvious reasons. Did you go to the defense? What do you want to do? All right. You want to make it up as we go.
See the graphic?
Yeah, I see the I don't because things are in the way. But I see defense. We're going to talk about the defense. We'll talk about Micah Hyde. Let's just talk about Micah Hyde because this kid's been playing amazing.
Well, the punt return was ridiculous.
The punt return was amazing.
The punt return had more to do with excellent blocking, I think.
It was an alley.
It was a combination.
He had to make the first guy miss.
Yes.
And then Richardson made an amazing block. And then
the guy's chin strap was off. That did help. It did help.
But I do want to say,
okay, people can look you watching on Twitter, by the way.
I know. I just want to say, the kind of, I guess, brouhaha, if you will, the hype, I guess the kids call it, around Clay Matthews moving to the inside.
Yeah.
Very warranted. Very much a game.
It really is. It's a completely different defense the last 2 weeks.
Very much a game changer. It is a different defense the last 2 weeks. I won't say mostly. A big part of it is Clay moving inside, no doubt. But what cannot be overstated is at the same time that they've moved Clay inside, they've gone all in on Micah Hyde being the nickelback. As far as when they run their 2-4-5 or whatever kind of alignment they use, Micah Hyde has absolutely taken over the nickel position. Casey Hayward had half the snaps that Micah, less than half, I think, than Micah Hyde had against the Eagles. He is absolutely owning the nickel position, whether it is the interception you saw against Jay Cutler, taking on the tight end, or whether it's helping him run fits, coverage, etc. His play the last 2 weeks, I was talking to Matt Bowen about it tonight or earlier today, his play the last 2 weeks has been outstanding. And that isn't getting the headlines, but it is absolutely a big part of the turnaround for the defense.
I would agree with that. I would also agree with, okay, if you're John Fox, okay, and you're looking at Julius Peppers standing up on plays and being in a 3-4 defense, and if you're even Chicago Bears, like, why was this guy, like, how much better of a player would Julius Peppers have been coming out of Carolina?
Had he been in a 3-4 for his entire career?
In a 3-4 his entire career.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of amazing.
It's pretty obvious when you look at all the athletic ability.
It's so obvious. It's like you don't need to put your hand down every play.
Although it's hilarious. Somebody was quoted, I don't know if it was Brandon Bostic, or somebody was quoted in the Journal Sentinel this morning saying, it was Mike Neal. It was Mike Neal who gave Peppers grief. He was like, I tell them all the time, they just throw stuff to you. Like, you get gifts thrown to you. And if you look at his two pick sixes, he's kind of right. I mean, the gift he got from Christian Ponder and then an absolute gift
but
from Mark Sanchez.
But he has had clutch sacks, though.
He has had amazing plays.
Clutch
There's no
sacks,
doubt about it.
Dude.
But it's one thing to have it thrown to you, and then it's another thing to do something with it.
Yeah.
And that's when you see the athleticism.
Yeah, how many
display.
People get a ball thrown to them and score a touchdown?
And then score a touchdown every freaking time. Which has happened.
Which is why we need to see that goal line play again.
Oh, man.
Hate to tell
you.
You're
never going to let it go.
I guess I'm the only one that wants it.
No, I want it. I want it. It'd be fun.
You know how badly you want it.
I want it when it's like 42-0. That's when I want it.
I don't want it
when the game's in the
balance. I want it. The game is on the line.
No, I want Jordy Nelson on his line when the game is on the line.
The game is on the line. It's in the playoffs against Seattle. And Richard.
You are insane.
No. And because here's why, right? You've got a team like Seattle, and they've got the cornerbacks, and they've got the safeties, and they're thinking, oh, they won't throw it to Peppers because they did it before. They're just trying to trick us.
Right, and then
they throw it to Peppers.
Touchdown. Lambeau erupts. By the way, speaking of Lambeau erupts, how obvious is it that we're kind of like going down the path where the Seahawks are going to get a wild card, and they're going to have to come to Lambeau?
Yes.
I mean, it's just like the football gods are like, this needs
and if
to
we
happen.
Do the same thing that we did in week one,
you're gonna die.
Something bad is gonna happen.
this studio,
it's not even gonna be about
this
me.
The studio will break. All right.
Something bad is
all
gonna
week
happen.
I've been saying we can't look ahead. I mean, good Lord, we can't look ahead to the Patriots, let alone the playoffs.
I'm sorry.
So we're gonna start. That was my fault. I just
no. I mean, I want to see the Julius Peppers trick play. I do. I think it's good. I want our answer to Refrigerator Perry. I've been waiting for it since I was 3 years old, and I want to freaking have it happen.
Another thing that the defense did very well against the Eagles, and they've done this a few times this year, and it hasn't been talked about a whole lot in the press, is the mixing of the coverages. And I'm not just talking, okay, on this play they're playing man, this play they're playing zone, although they played a lot of man against the Eagles. They also did a lot of mix and match on a single play, where they're playing zone on one side of the field, usually the strong side, and then they're playing man on the other. Zone, man, zone. They're switching it up inside of single plays. That's pretty cool.
And that's crazy.
Like I said, it hasn't been talked about a whole lot, but they have been doing
it. How do you mix that up inside of a single play?
Well, if
so you show something, but then
you're
playing
something
else.
You show two man, let's say. You've got two deep safeties and a man across the board underneath. And then it's usually off of motion, and they motion someone off to kind of try and flood a zone or flood like one side of the field. Somebody doesn't follow him, so they zone that other side.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's say there's a backside tight end. Let's say they have three trips over here and a tight end on the other side.
Yep.
They man up on the weak side, I guess, although it's supposedly the strong side because the tight end's over there, but really it's the weak side because you've only got one eligible receiver.
Yep.
Three trips on the other side. Three trips. That'd be, what, nine receivers? Trips on the other side. So they man up on the weak, and then they zone the strong. It happens like four or five plays, but it's there, and it's so cool. And you can see Mark Sanchez go, what?
It's
kind of fun.
If Vic Ketchman was here, he'd be like,
he'd be so upset.
He'd be so upset because we're just talking about scheme.
I know. Can't have that.
Because you know what, Nagler?
What's that?
Scheme doesn't win ball games.
Yeah, sure thing. Jimmy's and Joe's, not X's and O's. I got you. and to his credit, he's right for the most part. But scheme plays a part. Let's all be
scheme does play a part. If anything, what it plays
to dismiss scheme is folly.
Well, I think what it plays the biggest part in is what the quarterback's trying to read, right? And because there are literally milliseconds between the quarterback making a decision about where he's going to throw the ball, if you can take anything away from him and brain mess with his head, that is where it works.
Well, it's like,
other than that, I don't think it's as big of a deal as some people.
It's all encapsulated in that video that Jason Wilde tweeted out earlier this week, and I retweeted, and it's amazing, and apparently it was done by Associated Bank 2 years ago. But it's Aaron Rodgers just talking about his process coming to the line of scrimmage.
Oh, that was 2 years ago?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because
we put that on our Facebook page.
I think it's Dan tweeted me. He's like, he's involved with Associated Bank.
Yeah.
And he said, God, I need to shout at you more. We did that 2 years ago. I was like, yeah, dude. It was an amazing video. But Rodgers talked about it. His entire process coming up to the line of scrimmage. And it will blow your mind. If you haven't seen it yet, seek it out. It is unbelievable. And it is amazing. Everything that goes in, and that it's less than 2 minutes, I think, the video, and he goes through it, and at the end of the video you're like, I can't believe he does all that, and then you're like, wait a second, that's one play.
Yeah,
he has to do that 50 60 70 times a game.
Well, and
it's
not
insanity.
And not only that,
it's insane.
One of the reasons he's so good is because he is the exact same on every play.
Exactly.
He never changes
consistent
how he is, his demeanor, you know, and the laughing thing he learned from Favre, because like that is a thing, like the whole laughing and having fun, that's what separates him. You know what I mean? That like Brady is poised, but how often do you see Brady like completely like just hamming it up and having a good time? Now he doesn't go Brett Favre style.
No, Brady goes all like, you know, he gets fun with his boys. Like he'll hit Gronk on the helmet and get all, yeah, that's right. Like, I mean, he has fun.
Yeah,
he does have fun
different.
With the high five thing.
It's different though.
Yeah, I hear
like you. Rodgers could get, I've seen Rodgers get mauled, right?
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Get up and be like, yeah, it was good, you know? Yeah. And that's a Favre thing.
Yeah. No, that was the ultimate Favre thing. But we won't go down there because we were talking about the defense. And
I mean, Favre started the show. I'm just bringing him up, dude.
My last point about the defense that I wanted to make, and I hate to make it, but here it comes. As much fun as we're having, the defense is playing better. There's no doubt about it. They have done so against two teams that are not, by any stretch of the imagination, power running football teams. And even if they were, the offense has had as much to do, if not more, than the defense in regards to getting out ahead, getting a lead. Now, obviously, special teams played a big role this week. Julius Peppers played a role later. But when you get out 17-0 early up, you've taken LeSean McCoy out of the game. Guys can pin their ears back and get after the quarterback. And that has always been, even before he moved Clay Matthews inside, that has always been Dom's like bread and butter. That's where he lives. Like that's his sweet spot. If you can get 21-point
lead, job in the last two
weeks. There's no, and I'm not like
early
said,
on with our run defense.
Yep,
you're
absolutely
right. It hasn't been tested by
but
an A-list star.
The question,
right?
And not even
but guess
A-list
what? Because
so
Adrian Peterson ain't playing, it ain't gonna get tested
well,
next week.
You don't know. We don't know. That's I'm not saying the Vikings are going to come.
Yeah,
in,
I know the Vikings.
I think
are not.
The okay. 2 weeks we may get tested.
This is not a trap game, okay?
At all. And Mike said it perfectly.
It's
this,
just
today.
Not, dude.
Not a trap game.
It's not a trap game.
It is a real dogfight there in Minnesota. First time playing outside in a while up there in Minnesota. That'll be fun. Their makeshift home away from home.
There is no way we lose this game.
Always a way.
There's no way.
It's
market
the NFL.
Zero. Market
it's the
zero.
NFL.
No, market zero.
The Packers will win, but
market zero. We're not losing.
But, you know, for all the excitement around the defense and its newfound proficiency, let's say, have yet to be tested by a true power
That's
running
true.
Football team. That's my only caveat. That's my only worry. That's my only.
Well, I mean,
so
looking
we'll
at
see.
The defense before 2 weeks ago, we were
it's,
ranked 31st.
Yeah, 32nd, actually. Dead last. And now,
two and a half weeks ago, we
were
31st. 3 weeks
crawl.
Ago, we were 32nd.
Starting
okay?
to crawl out of the cellar.
Not to pick nits, but
all
come
right,
on.
All right, I hear you. I'll give props where you're due.
come on.
Let's play a little rookie report. See how these young men are doing.
Welcome back to the Rookie Report here at CheeseheadTV.com for Week 11 of the 2014 NFL regular season. We'll start off with Devontae Adams. The wide receiver had an excellent day on the perimeter. 40-some snaps, a great job in the running game, busted Eddie Lacy loose a couple of times, and of course, wonderful work on the touchdown. A solid B for Adams in Week 11. Next up, we have HaHa Clinton Dix. The safety atoned for some of his sins over the past few weeks. Still had a little trouble tracking guys on the perimeter, but overall did a good job, was where he needed to be, a C-plus for HaHa Clinton Dix. Mike Pennell came to play, doing a great job of controlling his gap and forcing Eagles ball carriers to bounce things outside where the linebackers were able to clean it up. He wasn't great in pass rush, but overall, a solid performance, a C-plus for Pennell. Richard Rodgers continued his strong work in 2014. Yes, a few slip-ups in pass protection and one particular in the running game, but overall, he did a great job in his blocking, something that was definitely a detriment early on in the season. That's what you want to see from a rookie, continued growth, a B-minus for Rodgers. Finally, Corey Linsley with yet another great performance up front. The offensive line as a whole is doing great work, and they are following Linsley's lead. Yes, he had the snap that was hot that flew over Rodgers' head, but come on, Aaron's got to catch that. Overall, great work in the running game, absolutely stoning people in pass protection, a B-plus for Linsley. And there you have it, the Week 11 edition of the Rookie Report here at CheeseheadTV.com.
There you go, boys and girls.
I think Corey Linsley should have got an A-minus. That's my nit to pick on that one.
I don't know. I just couldn't. In the few times he slipped up in the running game and then the bad snap, I was like, man.
Oh, that's true. He had that ridiculous.
I mean, because here's the thing. If that bad snap happens in the second half or whatever, it's probably nothing. But the fact that it happened when it was still 3-0,
yeah,
and it could have been, and they would have given the Eagles the ball in basically the red zone.
True.
That could have been a disastrous play. So he kind of took off his grade. But, you know, that's a couple days ago. Let's go back. Let's set the way back machine, Mr. Banky.
So, you know.
Put the camera on you.
Aaron Nagler likes to wear this hat that says Packers established 1921. And I took some umbrage with it. And he decided to go on Twitter. And then he started to have this argument. Then he found some like guy who wrote a post about how there's all this different views of like when the Packers actually were established, not as the NFL.
And all I said was it was an interesting post.
Uh-huh.
All I ever said.
Yeah. And
find the tweet.
And put Corey Banky. I don't need to find
just,
the tweet.
I'm just CCing you.
Dude, when you have 50,000 tweets, it's hard to find the one tweet.
50,000. Come on, dude.
What do you have, like 300,000? I have 100
something.
I don't. I need to unfollow you on Twitter. So all I'm saying is Cliff Kristol, the Green Bay Packer historian, a man who knows more.
An authoritative voice, if ever there was one.
Yes. A man who knows more than just about anyone except for one other man, Lee Remmel. Probably knows the second most about the Packers of as far as who's living, yeah. Right? And he has this excellent post. I want to read just a short little segment to it.
Corey's going to read to you now,
where he
boys and girls.
Where he establishes
get your blankets.
1919, and he says why. And I think it's really actually fascinating. You'll be happy to learn, if you haven't been to Lambeau this season, that there's now a new graphic overlay that reads Established 1919 and appearing on the video shown on the scoreboard just before player introductions. I did notice that this year during Throwback Weekend, and I thought it was excellent. He goes on to say, I've also been writing text for the new Packers Hall of Fame, and there will be a sign as part of a larger display, not to mention other references, emphasizing the Packers were formed in 1919. Not long ago, I saw what looked like an officially licensed t-shirt that read, Green Bay Packers established 1921, as well as hats, as well as all this other crap. And there,
I just love how
a Packer transplants, people, where Aaron and I bitch about the fact that some marketing idiot at the NFL decides that the Green Bay Packers were established in 1921, which true, they did joined the National Football League in 1921, but most Packer historians, including the authoritative voice on the Packers, say 1919. It's for a couple reasons. Now, I urge you to go to Packers.com and read this. I love this. I'm going to actually read the second paragraph part of it that I'm not going to read, which is about like almost, it's like a small book, actually. It talks about why you don't choose 1918, or even you could go all the way back to the 1850s, which in Green Bay Packer history, most times what they say is that's Green Bay High School East versus Green Bay High School West, which would 5,000 people would show up. But the first professional team that Curly Lambeau played for more than one game and was the captain of was the 1919 Packers. So he goes on to say, the year the Packers joined what is now the NFL. I'm new here, which I love because he's not new at all.
Right.
But I don't believe the league ordered the Packers to change their birth date. Which is interesting. It was simply a case of the team's early history becoming increasingly muddled over time. And part of the confusion is centered on when the Packers started. What's important moving forward is that I think as an organization, we're committed to getting things right in the future. For example, I think we made a good start this year with changes to the media guide. But I also want to emphasize that I'm uncomfortable about rewriting history unless it can be proven something is incorrect or the evidence overwhelmingly suggests it. In a nutshell, the Packers story is a rare case where the truth is better than the myth. Some have tried, but you can't make up a better story than the real one.
That is the truth.
I think that's amazing. So that's kudos awesome. To Cliff Kristol.
Cliff Kristol is the man. We have to get him on the show. He was going to come on last year, and then something happened, and we couldn't have him on.
He's an amazing man. He's written. He wrote.
He's
for the
reason
JS
I started. He's the reason I started blogging.
And I just think it's amazing. I mean, the Packer history. To me, it's really important. And 1919 actually was a great year. Like, when you look in the annals of United States history and, like, all the things that were done and the different cars there were and the different, like, you know, before World War One and everything that happened.
Right.
It's pretty amazing.
I love actually Cliff because, like, World War One. That book that we have up there on the wall there.
Green Bay City and its team.
That features your photo of Ted.
Yes.
Amazing book. You and I both have it. It's awesome.
And there's a lot of inaccuracies.
And he's the one who pointed them out. Like, Cliff was like, yo, I'm not ruffling feathers, but this is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. Great book.
True.
But this is wrong.
But
is wrong.
The reason, and I agree with that.
Right.
And it's great. People should point out the inaccuracies in historical books, right? Yeah, if the book is called Green Bay, a history and its team. But don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. The book actually has
amazing.
It's great stuff. Showed Matt Weir this. There's a great picture that apparently still exists. I didn't go check it, but there's a picture of the Acme Packers and it shows the freight docks behind Acme Packing Company, and they actually still exist. Like,
that's
you can see the outline.
Okay,
and he points
it
out.
Next year we have to have this year we have to.
Sorry,
have
I think that's cool.
We need to have a Cheez-It TV photo shoot there in front of the docks.
There you go.
It needs to happen. Needs to happen.
As we get kicked off by the people that own it.
They're can't wait.
What are you kids doing?
I can't wait. Can't wait. So my only thing to all of that, and I never disagreed about 1919, as you said so eloquently. We had a whole segment about it years ago on this here program that we all bitched about it, and I agree. I hate that it's not recognized as 1919, although, as Mr. Kristol points out, that seems to be changing. That's awesome. My only thing, I like the hat, dude. Just wanted to wear the hat. That was it.
You're annoying.
Just like the hat.
Kudos to the Packers for writing something. You know, they should be the most credible about their own history.
Yeah,
so kudos
obviously.
To Cliff Kristol. Kudos. Hopefully the pro shop will now refuse. I put it on the pro shop to refuse to sell anything that says the Packers were established in 1921. Let the NFL sell what they want to sell.
Right.
But keep the Packer history for the Packer history.
I'm all in on that.
Vikings preview and prediction.
Come on, Vikings game. It's here, people. The second showdown with the Vikings is at hand. What can you expect? You can definitely expect the Packers not to struggle on offense, but it is not going to be the blowout we saw last time around.
I disagree, but...
I know you do. I think the combo up front of that 4-3 defense, at the edge... Specifically, especially their rookie, Barr, he's going to be an issue. And he is having a Defensive Rookie of the Year type campaign. And I think Aaron and company will score plenty of points, and I think they will win. But I don't think it's going to be the offensive explosion that we've come to know and love over these last 2 weeks. Now, I could be totally wrong. I have been before. Yeah,
I used to be always wrong about the score. Now I'm more right than wrong.
But we'll see.
I think it's going to be a blowout.
On the flip side,
it is the Viking Super Bowl. Let's just say that.
Yeah, it is.
That's why you got to be careful, because the Vikings, this is it. This is 2014 season comes down to this.
On the flip side, you can expect Dom to blitz Teddy Bridgewater a whole lot more than he's blitzed, I think, most quarterbacks this year. He didn't even blitz Mark Sanchez that much. And, you know, he did a little bit, a little NASCAR package action, but I think you can
expect...
You don't
need to blitz Mark Sanchez.
Exactly. He's going to throw it right to Julius Peppers, so why blitz him? Or you can just do a straight-up rush and have Julius get in his face so that he throws a lollipop to Tremont Williams. You know, whatever you're going to do. But I think you can expect Dom to kind of bring the heat on a young quarterback who has played well. I love Teddy Bridgewater. I loved him coming out. I love him as a QB, as a person. I want him to succeed. It just sucks that he's on the Vikings. And he has played well. He has a tendency to check it down. He is a little bit of, he's got a little captain check down in him. And I think you'll see a little bit of that.
In some ways, I wish Rodgers had that a little bit more.
Yeah, well, he hit Eddie for that touchdown, and that was a
checkdown.
Pretty much a checkdown. So yeah, it's okay. But Teddy will see a whole lot of heat coming his way. Now, this is Norv Turner as the offensive coordinator. He knows what to do. He knows the tricks of the trade, so to speak, when it comes to Dom's 3-4 defense. And I think you can expect some drag routes. I think you can expect the screen to be featured quite a little bit, especially to McKinnon if he's healthy. I know he's been on the injury report, but ultimately, when it comes down to brass tacks, the Packers should win this game 41-17.
I'd say 56-3.
Okay, 56-3. I'll take that.
And it's hard for them to throw screens if we're not blitzing, by the way.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I don't think we're going to be blitzing that much.
Yeah, I do.
I know you think Capers going to blitz.
I think Capers going to bring the heat.
I feel like do what brought you to the dance the last 2 weeks. Don't blitz.
No, I hear you.
You don't need to.
Yeah. Maybe. We'll see. Maybe they just leave it up to Clay and Peppers and Perry and whoever.
That would be nice.
I like it. And Mike Neal. By the way, Mike Neal.
They said that on the chat.
If you go watch his sack.
Yeah, definitely.
I love the fact that he literally hops from gap to gap pre-snap, and then the ball is snapped, and he goes, and the center has him initially, and then the center passes him off to the guard, except, the guard is blocking someone else because Mike Neal was hopping around, and he didn't know what his assignment was. Well, he knows what his assignment is, but he thought, he's going to go that way. He's going to be occupied by the center. The center passed him off to the guard, who's already engaged. Sack. Love it. I love it. I love that he's given that freedom, and I love Mike Neal's ability, and good times. Good times. So, is it that time?
Yep.
This week in the Packer blogosphere.
All right, it's speaking of the Packers blogosphere, the return of that terrible series. Let me give you a little background on this one. Generally, when it comes to this week in the Packers blogosphere, I try to point out stuff that I enjoy, stuff that I think is smart, stuff that I think deserves to have the spotlight shown on it. But this afternoon, I was in a bad mood.
Really? And I couldn't tell.
I was in a bad mood, Corey. And I was trolling through the Packers blogosphere, and I was looking at stuff, and I was thinking, I want to call somebody out. I want to get in a fight. I want to hurt someone like we used to, like back in the old days, like back when we were still like these scrappy young up and comers.
Yeah.
And we would take on all comers, and we would just, like, you know, go after people.
Yeah.
So So I found a post that I was like, I saw the headline. I didn't even see the post. I saw the headline. I saw the headline and I was like, oh, this thing needs to get taken to town. And it's from a while ago, but I thought,
it's actually really good.
I'm going to go kick this in the ass. And you know what? It was perfect. It was a Packers fan do's and don'ts, which already, by the way, you hear that title and you're like, shut up. Don't tell other fans how to be fans. If there's one thing on earth that is unforgivable, it's trying to be fan police, right?
Yeah.
But then you read this post and you're like, this is perfect.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much don't scream when our quarterback is preparing at the line and calling a play.
It's a lot. I mean, but just everything about
do
it.
Do scream when the opposing team is lining up for a play. You'd be surprised. There's a lot of people that come to Lambeau Field, and they don't know the first thing.
Don't do the wave when the Packers are on offense.
Last time I was there, we're in the front row, and people think, like, if you're in the front row, you're entitled to stuff. Look, you're not entitled to anything. Just because you spent a lot of money for the ticket doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean you can stand up in front of fans that are behind you. Like, know when to stand. Now, if it's the playoffs, these rules do not apply, okay? If it's the playoffs and you're at Lambeau Field, number one, that's like, there's been less than 100 games at Lambeau Field in the playoffs, okay? Right. So right now, you're already in like rare time. So there are no rules, okay?
Yeah,
and the number one rule for me when you're in the playoffs at Lambeau is do not ever sit down, not one time.
Yep.
Okay?
I'm with you.
It will happen. I've seen it happen. But NFC Championship game, we said the whole time. 2007 NFC Championship, the entire time.
So ultimate Packer fan, whoever you are, I have no idea. That's the name. I think that's the name of the site.
The ultimate Packer fan.
The ultimate Packer fan.
I think his name's Wayne Sargent.
The do's and don'ts.
I've met him before.
Go check it out. It's absolutely perfect.
If you're going to go to Lambeau, you definitely should check out the rules. He's actually affiliated with Steve, the owner, who I love. Great guy.
Steve.
Great guy.
Who we saw when he was in New York last year.
I see him all the time.
But
he always comes by Throwback.
But he puts it down in black and white. And he's not mean about it.
No.
He's very matter of fact. But it's perfect. And like I said, I saw the headline. I was like, oh. I'm going to kill this.
It is true, though.
Like, I read it, and I was like, this is great.
I learned that from my grandfather. Like, if you respect people, like, you can talk all the junk you want to talk.
Right.
But guess what? When you talk junk,
You
got to be ready to take junk.
And I'm glad you said that, because one of the things that I loved about it was how in the do's and don'ts, he says, essentially, I'm paraphrasing here, don't be a dick to the opposing fans.
He says be considerate to the opposing team's fans.
In other words, don't be a dick to the opposing fans. Because that is one of the treasures of Lambeau Field.
Yeah, but you got to know, there's a line, though.
Of course there is.
There's a line.
Of course there is.
And also,
if the opposing fans being a total douchebag, by all means, let them have it.
And also, I will say this, okay?
Yeah.
Having been to over 100 Packer games myself,
yeah.
Outside of Lambeau,
mm-hmm.
There are different rules than inside of
it. Right.
Once you get in the bowl,
you're in hallowed ground.
Okay, now it's time for football.
It's all about the game.
It's not about, it's the first quarter. It's not about going and getting some beer because you're going to have to pee in the third and fourth quarter.
Right.
And you got to respect people because guess what? They bought that ticket.
Yep.
Now, you can bitch out the Packer fan that sold them that ticket, which my grandfather used to do.
Oh, yeah.
But they're not there right then. But outside the stadium, that's your time.
Talk some junk, stir it up. But even outside the stadium, whenever I'm there, I'm tailgating or whatever, I always invite opposing fans. Come have a beer.
Yeah.
Come have a brat.
Yeah,
whatever.
Of course. So you can talk shit to them.
You can talk junk. Yeah, it's awesome.
But
I'm still, it's never like, hello, there's a video out there this week of the Chargers-Raiders game. People getting thrown off of like freaking railings and bashing their head open and blood everywhere. People, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Like, what is wrong out there in California? Between that game and the guy who became a vegetable, basically, because he went to the freaking bathroom at a 49ers game.
Well, and that's the rule. I've told people all the time,
never go
to the bathroom by yourself at an opposing game. Never. Don't ever do it.
But that's the thing. I don't even think he was by himself. He was just standing in line for the freaking bathroom.
But nobody knows what was said. You don't know what was
said. I don't care what was said. Nothing that could possibly have been emanated from a man's mouth in sound form means that he should be a vegetable for the rest of his life.
You are 100% right, but people do stupid things.
Especially in California at football games.
And honestly, also, people do stupid things and they think they're safe just because they're at a public place.
Right.
When you're
right.
surrounded and in a line going to a urinal, you are surrounded by 40 people who don't like you just because of what you're
wearing. Right.
Like, be smart, people. And yes, Scott, that's awesome that you're a season ticket holder. So am I.
Rock and roll. All right, we wrapping it up?
Yeah.
Oh, we should maybe say a little something about our special guest next
week. We don't want to jinx it, but we probably, because, you know, when Aaron decides he's going to, like, do a little ahead marketing, it always, this show just blows up. So we are going to.
I don't even know what that means.
We're going to have an in for the first time.
First time. Now, we've had a
this
guest.
Studio.
Yeah, in this studio.
First time in this studio.
Dick Chang joined us a couple years ago from the old place.
This first time in
guest
studio.
He wasn't on camera. First time ever in the house studio guest.
Yes. Possibly sitting in my seat.
Possibly sitting
right
there.
Which is going to be a little bit weird. But I can guarantee you whoever it is going to be more attractive and more intelligent than I am.
This is
true. Which is not saying a whole hell of a lot.
In both cases.
It's not saying a lot, but it's true.
And it's going to be a good time. So make sure you're checking us out next week. So that'll do it for this week's episode of Packer Transplants. Thank you so much, everyone who is still here an hour later after all of our ramblings. You guys are the reason we do this. We love Packer fans. Clearly, we love the Green Bay Packers. We have some kind of issue. That's why we're here. Packer Transplants. Go Pack, go.
Is there any positive in terms of motivation for your guys, how ticked off they are about how this played out? Any of that can be used in any positive way whatsoever?
I'm not in the mood for drama tonight, Jason. Okay? I appreciate that.
What do you think you told the critics tonight?